When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Alrighty, welcome back to the Celtics Lab Podcast. I am your host, Cameron Tepetify. I'm joined by Dr. Justin Quinn, Alex Goldberg. The Celtics season is upon us, and with a tilt against Orlando Magic and Paolo Banchero coming up, we thought we would talk to our friend Cody Taylor of Rookie Wire to tell us more about Banchero and a pretty exciting rookie class in the NBA. So, Cody, welcome to the Celtics Lab Podcast.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys. Good to be here. Happy to talk some hoops.
Yeah. Cody knows more about college hoops than most and young NBA players than most. He also edits some of my writing. So I thank him for that. Cody, we're going to jump right in. We'll talk about Paolo and kind of all the other young studs in the NBA this season. Justin, Alex, how are you?
Doing okay. Getting a little bit of a sniffle coming on. So if my voice sounds a little hoarse, apologies in advance, dear listener. But all things being equal, I'm all right. Next week, I'm probably not going to be on whichever episode we record as parent-teacher conferences are coming up. And I'm going to be slammed, but I'm here now.
Oh. Dr. Quinn, how are things other than it being cold and chaotic?
Angry about traffic accidents. Yeah, my wife just got rear-ended in traffic on the way home from work, so I'm super thrilled. But other than that, pretty good.
All the same, I'm having an okay day. Cody, welcome. So we're going to do the news later, but first let's hop into what we call the Celtics Lab portion of the programming. And we'll start with Banchero because the Celtics will see him first. So Cody, tell us about Banchero, what you think about him as a player this season and where he might go in his NBA career.
Yeah, I think, I think he, as everyone saw in his debut, I think he, you know, there weren't a lot of holes in his game. And I think that he just kind of, you know, came out of the gate on fire. And, you know, this is a player that I think the Magic thought they were getting with the number one pick. Of course, we all know how much of a surprise it was that they even took Banchero, because all of the reports information was Jabari Smith. But you know, Paolo had a slower start to the preseason, and then over their last three games, he really kind of emerged, and something just kind of flipped, a switch flipped, or starting to figure things out a little quicker than maybe some other rookies. But he started to really show why the Magic took him, and I think, you know, he had such a big role with the Magic over the preseason, and it's already evident that he's going to have a huge role with the team. And I think that, you know, as you, one game in, we're already talking rookie of the year, but it seems like it's his to lose at this point. He is the odds on favorite by virtually every sports book out there, and there are a lot of them. But just based on how he played and his role this season, I think the Magic are going to really lean on him. I think he played 30, 35 minutes last night and, you know, had such a key role for that team down the stretch there against the Pistons. And, you know, you can kind of look at it that the Pistons are right in that same boat as the Magic, that maybe they're not outwardly tanking, maybe they're trying to get better. But for your debut to have 27-9-5 and, you know, to be talked in and in the same conversation as LeBron James as far as debuts by number one picks go, I think he did pretty well last night.
What do you think of the ceiling? And I mean, I guess the floor is they could end up tanking for Wembanyama. I want to talk to you actually about him later, but what do you think the ceiling for this Magic team is?
Yeah, I think last year they finished 22, 23 wins or so. Yeah. Over under for win total is 26.5 last I checked. And I think that depending on who you ask, and you know, being around a lot of the Magic media folks on a basically semi you know, daily basis, it seems like I'm a little lower on them this year than maybe some of them. I think that 32 wins, I've heard quite a bit from just talking to some other people, media people, more so than, let's say, anyone involved with the team. But, you know, I think that 30 is a big jump from 20 to 23. That's, you know, that's a huge improvement considering Paolo was really the only addition they made over the offseason. They brought back 14 players from last year, tied for the most in the league, I believe. And so I think if you get toward that 30 win range would be pretty good and show improvement. And maybe that means that they're in the play-in race for March, you know, maybe mid to late March, you know, kind of just alive in the race longer than they were last year, I think would be a nice goal for them. And then, you know, and just kind of see where they fall in the draft race. And of course, you know, January, February is when we really start figuring out which of these teams are tanking. And, you know, I'd like to see the Magic and maybe like the Thunder and Rockets not outwardly tank like they maybe have been in the past and really start to show some progress. But when you're looking at Victor Wembanyama and the on-deck circle, it might be hard to do that.
I have a question about the draft and basically like lottery odds and how worth it is to tank, because I mean, apart from the fact that Scoot Henderson is also available in this draft, like what do we know about the other players who are expected to go early in the lottery? Like if you miss out on both of those guys, are you kind of just screwed, or are there other good prospects that you would think would be kind of near the top of the draft?
No, I think there are some other guys and you know, it's obviously before any other college has started, they're in their camps and getting ready to kick things off. But there's a couple of twins in the Overtime Elite League, the Thompson brothers, that I think a lot of teams are curious about. And just kind of when you look at what Overtime Elite is, and you know, I think there are still some questions as to how viable that is as an option, a professional option, versus, you know, the G League Ignite or the NBL in Australia. So I think that, but that being said, I think those guys really have a lot to offer. There are some other guys. Nick Smith from Arkansas is a guy that was top five recruit in his class. And there's some, you know, there's some other guys that are sprinkled in. I think it may not be as deep as but last year, I would say, was probably one of the deepest drafts we've seen in quite some time. And obviously, it was very top-heavy, as we saw. This year's draft with Paolo and these other guys, I think, is can be a good class. We'll see. I think we may not know that it's a good class right off the bat, because as I was kind of looking this morning at some of the other rookies, there was a lot of DNPs, you know, a lot of guys not playing. But, you know, that's to be expected. But I think that, you know, if there's tiers to this upcoming draft, and obviously this will change as we're talking about it on October 20th, right? But, you know, I think there'll be other guys that, you know, if you miss out on the top two guys, there'll be other guys that are nice. They're not, you know, they're not in that upper echelon, I'd say.
And I think you, just jumping in really quickly here, there's way less pressure for Orlando to like have a losing season with the security provided by Banchero. I mean, so I thought that Banchero should have been the number one pick pretty clearly from the jump. It seems like he's going to live up to that. And I think just in the kind of tools that he brings to the table as a player, he's got elite size, he can handle the ball, he's got pretty good passing vision, and he just has a sense of like poise and maturity that you really don't see with players his age coming into the league very often. I think with him and Franz Wagner, who I also think has a really significant upside, the Magic have guys in place such that they should be trying to win, regardless of whether it ultimately pans out as they're talented enough to do that now, or if they need more pieces. I think given kind of what they have going, even in a situation where they are out of the playoff race firmly by, say, March or something like that, there's an argument to be had that the Magic should prioritize just trying to develop good culture and good habits regardless of where they stand in the Eastern Conference final standings, because they have the security of, you know, one, two, and maybe even three guys with Cole Anthony that can be significant building blocks for their future in a way that a team like Indiana or Utah or San Antonio, some of these like flagrantly tanking teams, probably don't have those kind of motivations or additional factors. I think it would frankly be hard for Orlando to even get into the top pick race, even if they did start tanking, given the state of some of the worst teams in the NBA.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, and this team that the Magic have right now is not, you know, they are still missing Jonathan Isaac, and I'm kind of done trying to figure out when he's coming back, because he last played in the bubble. Markelle Fultz is out for now. Gary Harris is out. Cole Anthony missed last night because of a last minute illness. And so that's when we kind of got to see Point Franz. And he really ran the team well at times. He had struggled at times, but that's kind of where they lacked a true point guard without Cole and Markelle. But I think that, as you said, that was, you know, it's going to be hard for them to tank almost. And so, you know, I think you got to start showing the fan base that there's so much excitement around the team right now, and just living here and just kind of talking to people I know that like the team and want to see them do good. And so I think that this year is a crucial year, and just to show improvement. They don't have to go out and get the 8th seed, but just show improvement, I would say. And I think a lot of people are excited about the future, and especially with Paolo in the mix.
I want to keep talking about this year's rookies, but I also want to segue to our ad read. So I'm going to ask you to think about this while I do the ad read. I saw that Victor Wembanyama is a minus 1,000 to be the number one overall pick next year, which is a big number, but I'm not a betting man, but I actually don't know if I would put real American dollars on that or not. So I'm going to ask you about that line in a second, but first I want to talk about our friends over at betonline.ag. Basketball is back, and BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. You can always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends on BetOnline. As your continued source for all your sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and live scores, as well as giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports and events, bet NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, and even golf. Head to betonline.ag today to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Make sure to use our promo code CLNS50 to receive your bonus. Bet online, where the game starts. All right, Cody, Victor Wembanyama -1,000 to be the number one overall pick. If you had cash to burn, would you put money on that or no?
I wouldn't, no. Because I would imagine the money you do put, you'll win $5 or something or so. But you know, I would say it would take you know, knock on wood, something really unfortunate for him not to be that top guy. And even, let's say, you know, I hate to even say this, but if he got hurt or something, I think teams would even still bet on it to, yeah, you know, because they saw what he did earlier this month against G League Ignite. And so I think that, honestly, no matter what happens to this guy, I think he'll be the top pick.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment. I think it would take like an injury that presents significant long-term danger for Wembanyama to not be the number one pick. Like, even if he like tears his ACL, I would be extremely confident that he would be the number one pick heading into next year. And that's not a knock on Scoot Henderson at all, who I think is going to be a fabulous NBA player. But Victor's, the potential that Victor carries as a guy who can move, space the floor, pass, and score the way he can at his size, it's just going to be too hard for NBA GMs to ignore. And I feel like if you are picking Victor Wembanyama with the number one pick, that's a guaranteed, like, I'm not going to get fired for at least 6 years move by the GM. So I think the odds of Victor not being the number one pick are like less than 1% at this point.
If you could go earn $5 if you feel strongly about that. All right, so the Celtics will face the Magic over the weekend, I believe. And
Saturday, I think, yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to see Banchero. It's in Orlando, so not that up close and personal, but, you know, we'll get to take a look at him from a Celtics purview. And then they don't really see any of the top-tier rookies until December, when they're going to see Canada's own Benedict Mathurin of Indiana. Cody, what do you think of Mathurin? Am I saying that right?
Mathurin.
Oh, man. I thought I had that one in the bag. I don't
know. Good job, man. But... you're doing it good.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Mathurin. You know, he's a guy, Canadian, that started out in the NBA Academy, the Latin America one, and really had a chance to kind of to get on the map there a little bit. I had the opportunity to talk to the international director there for the NBA Academy. And, you know, he was a guy that everyone just loved. His work ethic was just off the charts. He would come in, he'd stay late, he'd rally the guys and really just be that leader. And it's incredible because that was, what, 2-3 years ago, and he's only 19 right now, or or around there. So to have that kind of maturity and leadership at that young of an age, then obviously we saw what he did at Arizona. And I think he had a tremendous preseason run with the Pacers. He led the rookie class in scoring. He didn't score fewer than 15 points, I want to say, each game. And then last night he comes out with 19 and played essentially the entire fourth quarter there as the Pacers were trying to mount a comeback against the Wizards. And, you know, I think that he's just a guy that can just put the ball in the hoop. And you know, he's got all the tools you want on offense. He thrives in getting into the paint, finishing, using his big frame to finish through contact. We saw some of that last night. I was kind of flipping back and forth. I don't know about you guys, but between the Magic and just trying to catch all the games, all the rookies as much as I could. And so I saw a little bit of him, and then watching his highlights this morning, Benedict's. And I think that he's going to be a guy that has a chance to be in the Rookie of the Year race. I think, as we talked about earlier, it would take a lot, I think, for Paolo to lose. But I think that Benedict is going to have a great year. And our bold predictions on Rookie Wire, I had for him, it was a little tough. I wasn't really sure where to go with him, but I think I put him down for a 40-point game this year, at least one. And he had 27 points in a preseason game, 19 last night. So I feel okay about it. Feel okay. We'll see. He has that ability to go out and score.
He's certainly going to get the shot volume in Indiana to get 40. It might not be the most efficient 40 in the world, but he will have his chances.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that helps his case too, because I do like the Pacers roster, you know, kind of retooling last year and getting Tyrese. And of course they have Duarte and Isaiah Jackson, Benedict, and a couple other guys. And they might even be able to add to that with, you know, you'd assume at some point they'll trade Miles and Buddy Hield. So I think, you know, they could add another young guy or another couple draft picks. And so we'll kind of see how they materialize.
So I want to ask you about a couple more rookies, and you can hop in and add your own, as can Dr. Quinn or Alex. I'm going to start with Jalen Williams, not only because I find this Thunder team really fascinating, but he also shares an agent with Taco Fall. And that's a good enough plug to go listen to my conversation with Taco Fall from the other day. But yeah, tell us about OKC and Jalen Williams.
We're talking Jalen Williams, Santa Clara Jalen Williams, right?
Oh, good point. I guess I don't know which one shares an agent with Taco Fall.
There's Jalen Williams, who went to Santa Clara.
City, they both drafted the same guys with the same name, but they're totally different. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the kid who cut his eye last night.
Yep. Yeah. Jalen
Williams. I don't know if he's this. I might have gotten the agent thing wrong. Excuse me.
No, you're right. So yeah, they have Jalen Williams from Santa Clara. Spells his name J-A-L-E-N. They also have Jalen Williams from Arkansas, who they took in the second round, J-A-Y-L-I-N. So I'm sure Thunder announcers, media people, fans are going to love that this year. However, Jalen Williams, who cut his eye last night, good distinguishing there. So he only played 5 minutes last night, but I think that he's I put him, my bold prediction was he'll finish as a finalist in the Rookie of the Year race, which I think is a bit bold. So we'll see how it plays out. But he finished second in scoring in the preseason among rookies. He led all rookies in assists, and you know, just great situation for him. He's going to have the chance to play. I think they brought him off the bench last night, but you know, I think that just his ability to kind of to score and get others involved, he's going to be a guy that I think can be a nice little secondary option to Josh Giddey as the primary ball handler. And of course they have Shea and a couple of other guys who can handle it as well. So, you know, I it was amazing to me that they hung around last night with the Timberwolves and honestly probably should have won that game. Considering that, you know, where they are and where the Timberwolves are and their respective, you know, trajectories there. But it would have been nice to see him play, and I hope he's okay. It sounds like he's going to be all right. He posted he changed his default picture on Instagram to a picture of his eye, and it's pretty swollen up pretty bad. So he got a little got elbowed there, but I think he's going to be good for them.
I'm happy to report that Jalen Williams of cutting his eye fame does have the same agent as Taco Fall. So Justin, you don't need to edit anything out. I was right the first time. The Thunder team, I think Chet's really fascinating. It's a bummer, obviously, what happened to him. I think perhaps as high on Giddey as anyone in the NBA orbit, other than maybe Giddey himself. I'm really excited to see what that team does. It's such a shame that the tanking is going to be so furious this year, because these up-and-coming teams are really good. But I understand the math and why they would go into the tank. Okay, I have another one that I'm just going to keep it moving, I guess. And I can tease that Rookie Wire, Celtics Wire, and perhaps this podcast will have content related to the official NBA 2K23 season sim in which Sacramento's Keegan Murray won Rookie of the Year. I'm also happy to report that Jason Tatum won MVP, but that's for a different conversation. Cody, I guess, how realistic is Keegan Murray's Rookie of the Year candidacy? And just more broadly, what do you think about Murray?
Yeah, I think he's second among most sports books. And I think that in doing my predictions, I almost had him. And in fact, I think I started writing some of it out with mm-hmm. him winning. Just because I love his game, I think that he has the potential to be, when we look at this class five years from now, maybe one of the two or three best from this class. And honestly, he might already be in that range, but just his ability to shoot, he shot the lights out in the preseason in his two games, 7 of 10 from behind the line. He scored 16 points in both games. He missed the final couple because of he's in the health and safety protocol. So we didn't get to see him last night. All reports look like he should be okay to go on Saturday, but if not, he's only going to miss another game. So, you know, I think that he's kind of in that conversation for them to start. Mike Brown, their head coach, hasn't really named a starter. They started Akpala last night. So we'll see. I would imagine that Keegan will start by the end of the year, maybe even sooner, maybe even his first game back or whatever the case is, but he's going to have a chance to do a lot of good things. And I think that they're really high on him, and he just has that prototypical game in the NBA that a lot of guys are kind of striving for. And so he's definitely going to be a guy that I watch frequently on League Pass. That is for sure.
So you mocked, speaking of twin brothers, though different drafts in this case, his brother Chris to the Celtics on a Rookie Wire mock draft recently. Tell me, because I've been hearing that he might not be that much worse than his brother. So why is he even vaguely in Boston's second round range.
Yeah, I think that it's because he hasn't really gotten a chance to play. You know, I think there are some similarities, a lot of similarities in their games. And I just think that at this stage, Keegan's a little bit more developed because he had that chance to play. Chris didn't play too much. Don't have it right in front of me. But yeah, I think with Keegan sort of out of the picture now, I think that he'll have a chance from the start to really be able to step in and help them. And I think that if he can do, you know, I believe Keegan led the entire country in scoring last season, if I have that correct, or near the top. You know, he doesn't have to do all that, but if he even does anything remotely close to that, I think he'll be in that second half of the first round range. And I think that, you know, if you're a team in that range and they tell you you can get a guy that, you know, maybe 75-80% as good as Keegan Murray, I think that's great value at that point. So we'll kind of see how his season goes, but it's going to be it's going to be cool to see the similarities between them and if he can kind of distinguish himself from his brother.
So the last name that I have on my list of young players that I wanted to talk about was Jaden Ivey. So tell us a little bit about Jaden Ivey, but then I'm curious if you have anyone that I'm actually in dereliction of duty that I didn't bring up in the first place. So tell us about Ivey first.
Yeah, Ivey, you know, he's drawn comparison some to Westbrook, and they have a lot of similarities. They're both lightning quick. Jaden is a better shooter at this stage than Russ has, I guess, ever been, really. But, you know, he looked great last night. He had one quarter, I think it was the third quarter, where he just erupted and kind of, he finished with 19. I think he had at least 10 in like the third quarter, I want to say, as the Pistons were coming back against the Magic. But he looked great. I think there are still a few plays where he, you know, he struggled a little bit. He had some rookie turnovers, but I mean, it's his first game, right? So I think that he's gonna figure these things out as the season goes, and by all accounts, he will. You know, starting from game one with the Pistons, obviously they're not this like juggernaut team that has all these vets, and minutes are gonna be hard to come by. But I think starting from game one is gonna help him. They let those guys play through their mistakes, and they give them a long leash. We saw that with Cade. We saw that the year before with Sadiq Bey, Isaiah Stewart. Who, by the way, Isaiah Stewart is now hitting corner three-pointers. He drained one last night. I guess listening to the broadcast, he was 0 of 6 prior to that one. So, of course, Magic fans love that he finally got on the board. But, you know, they have a great development program there. And, you know, he won't spend any time in the G League. But all those guys that have come through there have done great things. So I think Jaden will be the next one for sure.
Just want to point out that Beef Stew talked about his three-pointer in, I believe, an interview with our friend Brian Kobrowski for The Win. So definitely check that out if you want some receipts that this was a plan.
I feel like for me, Ivy almost – I would be surprised if Ivy is in the Rookie of the Year running this year just because of how much Cade is going to be dominating the ball in Detroit and kind of the amount of work they're going to be sharing. But if you told me 5 years from now that Jaden Ivey is going to have the highest ceiling of anybody in this draft, I don't know that I would be shocked by that. I personally think Bankero's got a higher ceiling, but I feel like what I see with Ivey, I'm looking 4 or 5 years down the road more so than I am this year. I feel like if that guy puts it together, particularly from a playmaking angle, he could be a potentially dominant player at the guard position.
Hi, Cody. I have one more question actually to ask you, but any other rookies around the league that we just as basketball fans should have our eye on?
There's a lot of guys, honestly, and what I kind of mentioned earlier, there's a lot of DNPs last night. And so I love Dyson Daniels with the Pelicans. He was Ignite guy, didn't play he had a couple minutes, but I think that when he gets a chance, he's going to really be able to step in, defensive guy. Last night, though, Jalen Duren with the Pistons was incredible at times. He's just got this insane athleticism that and completely dominated the Magic down low and helped them, you know, kind of take over that game. And I mean, when the Magic were running, Caleb Houston at one point was their smallest guy on the court at 6'8". So they had Franz, they had Wendell, Bol Bol, Mo Bamba, just this insanely large lineup. And Duren was just working against it. So he's still a bit raw, I think, but when he kind of rounds out, I think he's going to be an awesome player. Walker Kessler last night with the Utah Jazz impressed me. First Jazz rookie with a double-double in his first game. You know, defensive guy, obviously we saw that last year at Auburn. So I think he's got some development to go, but I think the Jazz winning last night against the Nuggets was shocking, but we'll kind of see where they kind of go this year. And then the last one, just briefly, I'm curious about Patrick Baldwin with the Warriors. He's probably not going to play too much, but I think there will be a game or two where the Warriors are desperate, or a game that they're resting their, you know, resting the Draymonds, the Stephs, and the Clays. He just comes out and lights it up. So I'm curious to see about him this year. He's not going to do it every night. Maybe every few weeks, a couple times a month maybe, but I'm curious about him. He should be fun.
Cool. All right. Cody Taylor, editor of Rookie Wire. We'll get you out of here on this. I guess it's a two-parter. First, any rookie in the league have better hair than JD Davison? I asked facetiously. And second, just give us a little bit of a take on JD Davison. I don't think he's going to be a supremely featured player for the Celtics this year, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. What do you think?
Yeah, he's on the two-way, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I doubt, you know, he's going to see much time, right? I think that spending time in the G League, honestly, is probably going to benefit him so great, because we've seen over the years just how many guys have gone through Maine and what they've been able to do, maybe not with the Celtics, but elsewhere. So I think that's just going to be what he needs, just a year of development. I honestly thought he was going to be drafted high, or, you know, I just saw him as more of a borderline first round guy. I think in one of my mocks, I had him higher than most. I like his game. I just think that, you know, he's not ready right now, but I think that with time he'll be there.
Sure. And hey, Maine's a great place to learn how to play professional basketball. All right. If anyone listening ever reads my stuff on Rookie Wire and you think, man, this is so well written, it's because of Cody. It's not because of me. And if there's a spelling error, all the same. Cody Taylor of Rookie Wire, thank you so much for stopping by, and we'll bring you back closer to the draft.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, likewise. Back soon. So thanks again to Cody Taylor of Rookie Wire, part of the USA Today family. And we're going to talk about the Celtics now, because this is the Celtics Lab podcast. And boy, oh boy, I'm so excited to be talking about real basketball and overreacting to it. What a time to be alive. So the Celtics, no buts about it, waxed Philadelphia and their home opener, which we'll talk about the game. They won 126-117. Talk about the Bill Russell tribute and everything else that came with it. But before we get into the minutia, just your kind of like rapid reaction in summary, Dr. Quinn, what did you think of the first game?
Holy crap, was I wrong about the front court?
Yeah.
Well, is there a team that you could pick that would have a worse matchup for what we thought we had in the front court?
Yeah, I think Jokic and Giannis might offer some
Giannis maybe, but I think that it's pretty similar of a situation that they have a fairly similar formula, and the two main people they have to guard him are still available. So
that's true. I do think that the Celtics have a history with Embiid in particular, that and Horford and Grant Williams as well, where that in particular is a matchup that they've really, Embiid has gotten big statistical games against Boston, but he's never really been quite as threatening to them as some other like true superstar players. But yeah, no, it's true. As far as the front court depth is concerned, I think I'm definitely far less concerned than I was.
I mean, I guess we'll get right into the minutia. I do think that the geography of Philly's offense because of Harden drags the center, the locus of that offense, like closer to the three-point line or beyond the three-point line. And the Nuggets playing through Jokic, like closer to the nail, or Giannis playing above the rim changes things a little bit. But the suggestion that Boston's front court either can tread water or can go on the offensive by going quote unquote small, although Jason Tatum is a pretty big, small power forward, was really fascinating. So Dr. Gwynn, to respond, I do think that the Celtics are the perfect foil for these Sixers, but we can certainly explore the possibility that Boston's front court is in much better shape than we thought.
Let's one start. Game, it's clearly solved, right?
Yeah, that's how data works. I mean, let's start where the Celtics started, and that's with a Bill Russell tribute. So anyone watching or at the game saw, before the game, they had a nice video package honoring the late Bill Russell. Jaylen Brown spoke to the fans before game. After the game, he spoke pretty candidly about how hard it was to come up with what to say and how to say it, which I thought was really, really touching. The uniforms are a collaboration with Bill Russell before he died. The leaks looked bad, and in person, they looked great. The warmups look great. Lucky's outfit looks great. The whole pageantry, the visual pageantry of the Bill Russell tribute, for my money, was tremendous. The court as well. And then throughout the game, there were all sorts of tributes. They had players talking. They had different video packages. And at one point, Janine, his widow, was honored just on the screen to a very serious standing ovation. That
was tough, man. I started crying. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, this is a real peek behind the curtain. I was coming back from running to the bathroom. And so I was just like standing kind of in the concourse watching it. And a good like toilet paper commercial will make me cry. So you can only imagine how emotional I got at this moment. So that was definitely that was
guys, I haven't cried in years.
Yeah, Alex is Teflon. So that was the mood of the night, and Jaylen and Jason were both quick after the game to say, hey, you know, this was a different night. We were aware that the energy was different this night. So it would be incorrect to not make mention of that. Justin or Alex, anything else that I missed about the Bill Russell tribute? They'll have another for his birthday later in the year against the Grizzlies.
February 12th, yeah.
Yes, they'll have another tribute night, and then they'll use this court and these jerseys.
We didn't really talk about the court too much. There's not too much to talk about it. We've already talked about the removal of the white background on the logo in the center. We know about the six honoring him in the lane. I like them. You know, once I actually got to see them, we got a glimpse of them in the preseason as well.
They're better than I thought. I do think if we wear them against the Bucks, things are going to be weird, but yeah.
Yeah. But all in all, really nice tribute for a really nice man.
You think the color scheme might be more Seattle Supersonics than Milwaukee Bucks, considering he did coach them also?
I think it depends on... Yeah, I guess that's probably true if we're talking like the Kent Payton Sonics. I do think there are some Bucks uniforms, particularly in like recent history, that resemble those uniforms a lot. But
Justin's point, the story was that Bill collaborated on these or in some capacity. So actually that would be really interesting homage. I hadn't pieced that together per se.
I wouldn't be surprised. I have no idea.
Funny Easter egg. All right, the game itself, first quarter was interesting. They started White and Tatum alongside Brown, Smart, and Horford. So nominally small, although Jason Tatum is a gentleman 6'10". But the first quarter was a little choppy. I think it was 5 assists, 5 turnovers. It wasn't good. It wasn't bad. And then they dropped 39 in the second quarter, and that was it. They were in control of the game. They really just, Joel Embiid had no answers for that Celtics defense, despite, I guess what we're saying, it was an undersized front court. Either side of the ball, take your poison or your fancy, Alex. What'd you see from the Celtics?
The thing that I saw the most in the Celtics, and that was, I think, a kind of noticeable change from previous iterations of this team, is that this team wants to get out and run in a serious way. I noticed that they were trying to, whenever they were forcing turnovers, they were trying to get into the front court immediately. You know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Malcolm Brogdon in particular did a really nice job of attacking Philly in transition and kind of running them off the floor a little bit. And I think strategically that makes a lot of sense against the Sixers, who have traditionally been a kind of plodding, slower team that does a lot of stuff in half court sets. So maybe that's just a factor of the matchup, but I'm kind of hoping it's not, because this Celtics team has, for all of the athleticism and speed of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, been a little frustrating in its inability to sometimes get out and exploit that athleticism against teams that maybe don't have the wings capable of covering that. In particular, I think Jason Tatum's finishing at the rim, the confidence that he was taking the ball to the hole with, was really impressive and has me feeling optimistic about the Celtics' potential to be a top five transition offense team this year. And it seems like something that Joe Mazzulla has really made a point of emphasis for them. So that really stood out to me.
Doc's coaching and the lack of, and you kind of hinted at this too, the lack of interest in running Maxey, who was damaging Boston anytime he got, you know, into a full gallop. That also stuck out to me. I wonder if they don't have such a great start, if the team starts considering fairly soon, maybe as soon as the end of the season, to just reconfigure around Maxey, because we've seen what Joel does and he has to play slow. He's not going to be running down the court anytime soon. So,
yeah, what's interesting about them getting out and running, and so we'll get into the bigs, I'm sure, in a little bit, and the too long didn't read is Vonleh and Griffin combined for 28 minutes or something about that much. And they were good, not great. They had their moments, but there were stretches, certainly in the second half of the game, where the Celtics truly went small. And in fact, Grant Williams and Jason Tatum were the front court. And this is a peek behind the curtain, which is all the people who write about the Celtics are writing as they're watching. And sometimes you try to get everything done by the second quarter and hope that your observations pan out. And so I had a line written down that I said the Celtics are having an icy night from three, which is stymieing an otherwise pretty serious offensive explosion. And I actually had to change it to pedestrian, because they got that number up to, I think they shot 35% from three, which made a huge difference, because earlier when they weren't hitting any threes, this transition, Alex, of which you speak, was really exciting, but it just was disjointed, because so much of it was drive and kick, and the kick wasn't there. Once the 3-point shots started falling, and I don't think it was anything other than a little bit of luck, then the vision really came together. So I'm really intrigued by that possibility of becoming a high level transition team, so long as the shooting follows in suit.
Even without it, though, Brogdon was doing a great job of scoring in transition.
So much a good passer.
Yeah, just settling things down when Marcus Smart started going crazy. Just really good overall debut with the Celtics.
I think we also have to give some credit to Jason Tatum as a passer. He was really slinging the ball. And there were, you know, it's a classic situation where Jason Tatum makes a brilliant pass to a corner shooter who isn't ready for the pass and they brick the shot. But I mean, he's really placing an emphasis, and he was doing this last year, but I'm glad to see it's a trend that's continuing into this year, where he's really placing some emphasis on being a playmaker and kind of trying to expand his offensive package more so than just being a scorer.
And Smart, chaotic as he was, did end the game with 7 assists. So, yeah, Boston has perhaps a bias towards passing, A, because of new personnel, but then B, this undersized issue that they might have moving forward. Luke Kornet didn't play, although in theory should be back sooner rather than later. Dr. Quinn, I would hazard that the Vonleh-Griffin pairing was fine, if not so good. I think you're a little more optimistic on what that can do in the interim. What do you think about what you saw?
I think that my main concern is that I don't want people to have the wrong impressions about what version of Blake Griffin we're going to have or what Vonleh can do. The fact that Vonleh was passing, the fact that he managed to keep the ball out of PJ Tucker's claws when he went down onto the ground, the fact that Blake took a charge just as advertised at a very great moment to help break the momentum of the 76ers. Like, all those little things, I think, at worst, negate all the dumb things, the fact that Blake is clearly playing his way into shape. Overall, I think that they're going to be good enough. I think there's going to be nights where we are facing teams with more dynamic front courts. They're going to have some issues more than like big burly guys, because one of them has no lateral movement left and the other one never had it. So we're going to have some issues with that, but you know, one thing at a time.
Yeah. Horford had foul trouble, which is why he wasn't as featured.
And Grant.
Yeah. I don't like doing this, but the reffing during this game was just preposterous.
But also fouling three-point shooters is not good, to be fair, on both sides.
True. Yeah. Celtics, please stop doing that. James Harden looked really, really good last night or the other night, and his stats reflected perhaps an even better performance than he maybe gave kind of, I don't know, in his playmaking, just because we fouled him three times on three-pointers. Please stop doing that.
I disagreed with the assessment of some of those calls, but fair enough. Also, Harden absolutely cooking the Celtics, and then just like bricking a shot. Like, Alex, you play basketball with me. I can brick a shot as well as James Harden, evidently, because some of those shots are just ridiculous.
And you might be a better defender.
All credit to our zone. I can't possibly take that accolade. Okay. Just, I guess we've talked about the Philly side. Anyone want to do a massive overreaction to a single game, or should we keep it moving?
I would like to do a massive overreaction to a single game.
Cool, I have one too.
Yeah, and mine's kind of obvious, but the Jason Tatum MVP train is leaving the station, folks, and you got to get on board right now, because that dude looked really, really, really good.
End of season form in game one. We are used to him poo-pooing his way through the first third to half of the season, and he is not the same player. I totally agree with you. On the other side of the court, the 76ers are the same team with the same problems, even though they have new players doing new things, and it's just somehow they got to fire Doc. I'm sorry, Doc. I love you, but you are not. This isn't the team for you. I don't know if there is a team for you, but this is not the team for you.
I think I agree with that. I also don't think that James Harden and I mean, yeah, they need a coach who could figure out how to use James Harden, Joel Embiid together, because they're two colleagues. They're not, you know, partners right now, it doesn't seem. And poor Tobias Harris, he seems like such a nice man, but he's not going to get it done for that team. That was my hot take, is they need to have traded him yesterday. So congratulations, Tobias Harris, you're now a Laker.
They also need to just figure out, like, the Maxi Harden backcourt defense pairing is just not going to work. And they can't really play Tybalt in high leverage minutes, because he is the worst shooter in the NBA, or pretty damn close to it. But they've got to figure something out where those guys are like staggering minutes or something, because if you have Maxi and Harden on the floor in a close game late, that's just every single time over and over and over again, get him in a pick and roll and go from there.
Cool. All right. Just a few more things and then we are out of here. Let's start with the least interesting bit. No offense. Jake Layman is going to go play in Greece. We hardly knew you. The French kid Bagarin scored 28-5 in his debut for Paris basketball. And looking at our Celtics Wire analytics, the fans are very excited about that. Huh, Justin?
Oh, yes. He, every season for the last, you know, like 5-6 years, we've had a guy, now we have two, with Jan Madar also stashed overseas, and both are looking pretty good, but I would say at this point, I think Bagarin has passed him in looking like he's NBA ready.
Sure. We have a few games from the last two nights to talk about. There'll be some games tonight. This is going to drop late Thursday night, Friday. I'll give you a not so hot take. The Lakers are bad.
Oops.
I can't believe how bad they are.
Like, we're starting Lonnie Walker, Russell Westbrook, and Patrick Beverley all at the same time in the year of our Lord 2022. Rob Pelinka, man, what are we doing?
Sabotage.
Yeah, that's kind of my philosophy at this point, is this is a fake effort. It's a real tank job.
LeBron's like full-blown poison-pilled, right?
Yeah, he's not going
anywhere. He signed an extension.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, he is untradeable for this season. Next season, I believe that things open up a little bit more for him. But for this season, he will be a Los Angeles Laker.
I believe he has a no-trade clause, but that just means he gets to choose where he would get traded to. But yeah, it's tough in Tinseltown. I think they're going to get waxed by the Clippers tonight. Anyways, also not so fun is that Robert Williams III got a PAL injection in his knee, which is something that people get to help the healing of ligaments and to reduce pain. So not a particularly surprising procedure, but in this attention economy of ours, it got its own little news segment from a certain reporter that rhymes with comms, Karania, I guess. There was a hint that he's probably not going to be back in 8 to 12 weeks, that it could be longer. I'm going to just say all-star break, just to like mentally set the table for myself.
But Brad was on Twitch and Rich today saying that literally nothing has changed. We've heard a fair amount of reporting. I think this is just like kind of like a game of telephone situation where people kind of just freak out about something that didn't need to be freaked out about.
Yeah. And I, for what it's worth, I kind of assume that Rob wouldn't be back until All-Star to begin with. I think particularly if the Celtics front court is manageable, if Vonleh and Blake and Grant are able to just cobble together enough minutes to survive out there, take your time with Rob. You know, you need him for the playoffs.
Cool. And then the last thing we have on our docket is Jaylen Brown had his juice event last Saturday, and I went there to check it out. And I'll just say a few quick things kind of self-indulgently. The first is, I'll be honest, I felt a little icky about it. I am not happy with Jaylen Brown's positions on vaccines. I disagree with him quite strongly, if not politely. And I certainly would love to see him move on from Kanye West and Donda Sports. So I felt a little weird going to the event, having not known really like what the event would look like and how Donda it would be. But Juice and Jaylen being really thoughtful people, even if I disagree with some of their stuff, they had a really nice tribute to Terrence Clark, the kid from Boston who died in a car accident last year. They worked with his foundation, with his friends, with his family, put together a shirt, not just to raise money, but also to maintain his legacy. And whether it's talking to the creative directors at Juice or his brother, Jaylen's brother, Quentin, or Jaylen himself, they'll tell you that the whole brand is about community and building bridges and all of that wonderful stuff that is absent in the world. So in that spirit, I feel inclined to wade in a shade of gray with Jaylen Brown and his brand right now, because I disagree so emphatically about certain aspects of that, but there are other things that I couldn't possibly knock. So I had a nice time there, but it was interesting. And I didn't consent Justin and Alex to this heavy conversation, nor you, the listener, but I think Justin and Alex are going to weigh in.
Well, I'm only going to weigh in the following senses, is that Jaylen Brown has a complex set of beliefs and ideas that I could spend a lot of time thinking about and agonizing over. But instead, I am going to simply say, based on the results of a certain NBA game last night, I'm very glad that we did not trade Jaylen Brown for Kevin Durant or for any other member of the Brooklyn Nets, because that team is headed nowhere fast. Anyways,
let me just also add my 2 cents, and it's a pretty benign 2 cents in that the tweets you referenced were both deleted after the fact. I'm not real sure. I'm not going to spend a lot of time trying to, you know, remotely figure out what his thought process was with that, but it appears he's taking a little bit more caution with those things. And I don't care what NBA players believe personally. I care when they use their platform to add weight to a cause. And if you believe in something strongly, then make sure you put in the effort, speak to all the experts you can find, particularly if they have, you know, methodologically rigorous reasons to call themselves experts. And be careful with stories like that, because as I commented on that particular tweet, I've reacted very poorly to people doing that in the past because of personal impacts in my own life. But the main thing that I'm taking away from all of this is that we can all be a little bit better in terms of how we discuss contentious topics. And if we have a platform that we're going to use, we should be careful with it.
Yeah, not for nothing, and not to oversimplify the matter, but the person that Jalen retweeted and then undid the retweet but kept the like is this anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim politician from the Netherlands. I don't think Jalen agrees with those stances, but I think he liked what he saw. And like we all do, I use social media socially and not with as much care, perhaps. So anyways, on that weird twist, we can end there. Thanks very much for listening. Like and subscribe if you haven't already. Celtics are going to be down in Miami. They'll play Orlando, and they'll be back in Boston to play the Bulls. We'll talk to you sometime after that, I'm sure. But be on the lookout for a very special edition of the Celtics Lab podcast sometime soon.